This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. we don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that, man, the weather. Milwaukee. Yeah. Milwaukee, man, took a pounding, y'all. Rained so hard, so bad that, you know, the groundwater just kept flowing and causing sinkholes and streets to collapse, flooding, serious flooding. Man, they had to have rescue boats, water at the top of the, beyond the cars, man. Flooding in basements, homes flood. Wow, the weather. Yeah, it's tough. You got to deal with it. Some places hot. There's fires. There's now, and you know, I know that there are certain groups that would say this is God's condemnation on a people for how they are. But you know, it's deeper than that. It's real than that. You want to say that? You can say that. You can say anything you want to say. But there are reasons. Biological reasons, physiological reasons. Climate change is real. It is real. Yeah. This is African Perspectives. We're African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific on any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that, the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. This program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Monday and Wednesday, Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson and Brother Johnny out of New Orleans from 7 to 9 Monday and Wednesday, Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson and Brother Johnny out of New Orleans. Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday, The Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Friday, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. Sunday, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney with activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. That's right, Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 to 6 on Sunday with activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then after that, at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. The largest online marketing, the largest online marketing place for American African owned businesses. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, go to WeBuyBlack.com, because if you don't, who will? That's why things fail. We may have 40 million people, and that's a lot if those 40 million people had the consciousness and the understanding of supporting one another. We could be very successful. We could be very successful. But I know this society perpetuates individualism. So you think individually. You don't think, you know, collectively. You don't think as a group. You don't think how good it is and how good it would be to be collective, to pull our monies together, to not only to strengthen the business that we have, but create more and do more and live in our community. I don't give a damn about anybody. I want to make our community solid. I know. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. America, Western society. But boy, if we had that level of consciousness, I'm telling you. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. I didn't put the things on the board. Well. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba. He's taking a group of our people to the motherland soon. So give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans. .org. Habesha Incorporated.org, helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habesha. Brothers and sisters, go online to Habesha Incorporated.org and see for yourself the great work that they are doing here in the Atlanta area and in Ghana, the Kashi Project in Ghana. Habesha Incorporated.org. I will present the information on the computer that I have on Wednesday. Okay? All right. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the West End. And they have delicious smoothies and fruit drinks, dry goods, and all kind of good stuff for you at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Yes, I was at Mama Nia's this past Saturday. It was beautiful. So many brothers and sisters came through. Outpouring of love for a sister that has dedicated herself to open a bookstore 30-something years ago and to be consistent, providing information for our people. So it was an anniversary and pre-retirement. And if she makes that move, and I hope that she does, it's well deserved. But I really hope is someone or a group of someones will work with her to keep that bookstore open. Keep it open. The Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you want to give Mama Nia a call, call her at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, t-shirts, figurines, and so much more. She's an institution. I mean, I know we have other bookstores here in the Atlanta area. I know some of us don't have any bookstores anymore. I know Milwaukee doesn't. By the time I left Milwaukee back in 2014, over 10 years ago,
They had two of them, at least at that time. I remember when they had about four or five of them. Bookstores. And of course, when I say bookstores family, I automatically mean American African bookstores. You know, American African. I don't mean Barnes and Noble. You know, I mean American African bookstores. And none now. But that's like, it's like that in communities where we're predominant across the country. They don't have bookstores. And because I understand the technology, you know, that's the problem. Once again, man, you know, once technology and artificial intelligence and all that stuff come into being, it cuts down on the ability for human beings to create something physical that they can deal with and that people can support, and a living is made. Man. Yeah. The Black Dot Bookstore. It's no longer the Black Dot Bookstore. I got to get the information on it. It moved into the Stonecrest Mall. So I'm going to call Brother Gazimde Ajamu today and get that information and stop in there real soon. It's in the Stonecrest Mall. It's in the same area. It's in the same area. It's near the New Black Wall Street. The New Black Wall Street was a former Target store independent of Stonecrest. And that's where the New Black Wall Street is. And I suggest that you support them as well. But I'll get the information to the new bookstore and go out there and check it out and report back to you. And hopefully that you'll go check it out too. Okay, family? And, of course, the New Black Wall Street located in, well, it's not Lithonia, it's near Stonecrest. And, you know, if you want to check out the New Black Wall Street, head east on I-20. Go to exit 75. Exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Make a right, three lights, make another right. On the left would be the New Black Wall Street Market. So, check it out. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Not open today. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Open Tuesday through Sunday. 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Located 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give Brother BJ a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. The Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. Gabby Aurelia, she's helping our children in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti with her organization called Sanjay-Haiti. She provides all kind of help to young children in there, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, education. Yeah. She deserves to be supported. Brothers and sisters, I ask you, please, go online to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org. That's how you pronounce. That's how you pronounce Haiti. Haiti. That's how you pronounce Haiti. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Baba Barudi and Mama Ya. You know, school has started, so they're busy with that. I'm trying to get Baba Barudi on again sometime soon. Yeah, sometime soon, I tell you. Yes. But right now I'm going to go through the Inyasisim daily revolutionary thought. I want to today. I'm just going to be honest with you, family. I'm trying to organize the stuff that I see. But I need, as my lady tells me, to write stuff down. That's what I need to do. I need to document where I saw it. You know, when it's near, and then so I can get to it. I'm saving too much stuff and not writing it down, you know. Yeah, that's what I need to do. And that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Donald Trump wants to take over D.C. You see what that, man? I tell you, Donald Trump is something else, man. Donald Trump is unbelievable. Unbelievable. He's an evil man. Evil man. So I had a piece that I wanted to talk about with Trump, you know. Yeah. And it was how foolish all this stuff about Trump and what he has done, and yet and yet people still support this man. This is crazy, isn't it? It really is. This man, habitual liar, you know? He's an habitual liar. And yet, people consistently support this man. Unbelievable. Okay. I know. Talk about a few things before I go into the Inyasasim. The Inyasasim, Baba Baruti and Akabin Institute, he has the Menticide course every Wednesday, 7:30 to 9:30, hour and a half. The course this time is Menticide. Menticide. Every Wednesday. The course Clarity is, Oh, I really got a bad one here. All the information I got is old. Well, never mind. Never mind. Trying to make stuff work and it just ain't happening. It is all good. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to read Kweku Roko, Dr. Wade Nobles, from this past Friday. Because, you know, on Fridays I read Tuesday, Friday, Saturday. I read three of them. And so Saturday is August 9th. And I want to read it again because it's important to understand. Saturday, August 9th, dealt with the word Jegna. J-E-G. N-A, J-E-G-N-A. The plural form for the word is Jegnach, J-E-N-O-C-H, Jegnach. And what is a Jegna? Are those special people who have, one, been tested in struggle or battle, two, demonstrated extraordinary, unusual fearlessness, I'm trying to get that word out, unusual fearlessness. Three, shown determination and courage in protecting his or her people, land, and culture. Four, shown diligence and dedication to our people. Five, produce an exceptionally high quality of work. And number six, dedicated themselves to the protection, defense, nurturance, and development of our youth by advancing our people, place, and culture. Dr. Wade Nobles, Nana Kweku, Dr. Wade Nobles, Jegna. In Greek mythology, Mentor is the adult male whom Odysseus, the protagonist in the Odyssey, trusted to raise and protect his son, Telemachus, as he traveled the world in search of the Avenger. You know, war. Yeah. Mentor, however, apparently had plans that went far beyond the mere development of Telemachus' cognitive skills. His intention as a Greek were naturally homosexual. Historically, in European culture, when boys or girls are left in hands of adult males or females, they become their sexual victims. And this is what makes using the Greek term mentor extremely problematic. This is what makes using the Greek term mentor extremely problematic for Africans seeking to maintain a heterosexual sanity. We give power to others and their way when we use their cultural particular terminology to define ourselves, those who we honor, and by default their and our actions in the performance of those roles. So Africans should use the term jegna, not mentor. Africans should use the term jegna, not mentor, when honoring those particular Africans who unselfishly put us much of their energy, who put so much of their energy into training our youth to be adult warrior scholars, which is so vitally important for us. Affirm, I am a jegna. Affirm, I am a jegna. I've said that numerous times. Oh, I need to get that. what do you call the young people? The young people who, the jegna and the jegnox are working with, are motivating, inspiring, and teaching, and guiding. So I'll get that for you too, family. Okay? Okay. August 10th. If an African-centered liberation movement is to be successful, it must rescue the collective African mind and soul from the clutches of Eurocentric and non-Afrocentric ideology. Dr. Amos Wilson. Liberation does not just happen. It requires an intentional, planned movement within which the problem has been articulated and the means of correction understood and agreed upon by all involved. Any movement designed to liberate African minds and therefore African people must be informed by the magnitude and tenacity of our mental bondage and the fact that we are and must be uncompromisingly African if we are to be free. If not, no matter the efforts or sporadic success, it will never truly emancipate us. One tether, one civil link to this cultural chaos remains. Wow. We will again be drawn back into its insanities. Affirm, I will not tolerate not one tether or not one servile link to this cultural chaos. Not one tether or servile link to this cultural chaos. August 11th. Slavery attempts to make a man a brute. It treats him as a beast. It's terrible work. It's not finished until the reigned victim of its lust and pride and avarice have hated is reduced so low that with tearful eyes and feeble voice, he faintly cries, I'm happy and content. I love this condition. Henry Highland Garnett. Henry Highland Garnett. Conscious Africans makes a distinction between slaves and people who are enslaved. And of course, you know, I don't like the word slave. I don't use it. I use the word captive. But for this particular piece, I'm going to use that word. You know, a lot of words I don't like. Slavery reduces a mental dysfunction in which individuals see themselves as property of those who control them. Slaves believe in the correctness of their oppression and exploitation and are willing to participate in it. Enslaved individuals understand that they are only captives, only physically bonded until they are able to free themselves. They are constantly at war against those who detain and oppress them. Most Africans are not slaves. I repeat, most Africans are not slaves. They were or are enslaved. Enslaved. That has changed. There is a notable disturbing trend, an ongoing escalation in proportion of Africans suffering from intense levels of mental self-hate. The process of our Europeanization is continuing to increasingly wreak havoc on the African mind. Warriors must know the problem and its source in order to stop it. The wisdom of African teaches us that when a reed is bent too far in one direction, it will have to be bent even further in the opposite direction in order for it again to become straight. Ashe. I reject all forms of captivity. I reject all forms of slavery. All forms of captivity. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sisim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Baba Rudy. Baba Mwalimu. Bomani. Rudy. Yeah. I want to talk today about, I had some information on Trump that I wanted to present. The reality of what we're experiencing. You know, some like to root this rise of Trump in the time he attended one of the dinners while Barack was still president, and he was humiliated. People laughing, and he sat there seething with his fat, funky ass. Man, he sat there seething, and as he told Oprah Winfrey, said, if I did run, she was kind of egging him on to some degree, I guess. If I did run for president, I would run as a Republican because they're stupid. This is what he said. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump is the most arrogant, egotistical, narcissistic person that there is. He has to be. All the shit that he's done, all the things that he'd done prior to this, to the 2016 election, all the things that should have taken place for him to run. You should not be able to run for president if you don't show your taxes, if you don't show that you're responsible, quote, American, by paying your taxes. He didn't show them then, he ain't showing them now. And yet, this country allows it. The fear of this man, they allow it. He sat there seething. Seth Meyers got up there too, made a bunch of jokes about him. You know. Just as he told those cocky, I am your retribution. All the things that he is closing, things that he's closing down. I think I've seen where somehow over 500,000 sisters, or is it 300,000 sisters? A great number of sisters who have gone to school, because you know, sisters got more, the group in this society that has more degrees than anybody else is American African women. And many of those American African women lost their positions. They have degrees, but they have no jobs. Donald Trump eliminated them. He's a very vindictive man. He's a very evil man. He's not smart at all. I know before he knew everything. If you remember, this time around, when the press is asking him, oh, I don't know. You got to ask him. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You mean to tell me that you don't know how Elaine Maxwell can move from a maximum security prison to a minimum security prison? You don't know? You haven't been informed? Man. So I don't know about you, family. I don't know about you. This is why I'm consistently and have, even before the rise of Donald Trump, called for an exodus of our people. And if some of these things that you are seeing don't make you understand that that's what we must do, I don't know. I don't know, family. I don't know about you. I don't know. Because it's in your face. It is in your face. Yeah. I'm going to play a piece. I'm going to let some of these pieces do my talking, I guess. This is a good piece by Bruce Springsteen about what is being done, what is being witnessed. So I'm going to play this one piece by this brother, and then this Caucasian who I've seen many times on YouTube, and he gives comparisons and numerical comparisons and graphic comparisons between what's happening and what's happening with us and what's happening with Caucasians. So I'm going to play those particular two pieces. But let me play this particular piece here for you. This is Bruce Springsteen. There's a lot of us, along with other Caucasians, who don't believe the hype, you know, and can't stand Donald Trump either, rightfully so. But the reality is, he is the best example of white supremacy, which I call European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. Reason why I don't use it, they're not white, and they sure in the hell ain't supreme. Just like we ain't black. We Africans. We're not black. Black is a color. Well, you can use black. Yeah, you can. You can do that. Interchangeably, you can use. Okay. Let's talk about this particular piece that Bruce Springsteen put out.
There's no art in this White House. There's no literature, no poetry, no music. There are no pets in this White House. No loyal man's best friend. No socks the family cat. No kids' science fairs. No time when the president takes off his blue suit, red tie uniform, and becomes human. except when he puts on his white shirt and khaki pants uniform and hides from the American people to play golf. There are no images of the first family enjoying themselves together in a moment of relaxation. No Obamas on the beach in Hawaii moments, or Bushes fishing in Kennebunkport. No Reagans on horseback. No Kennedys playing touch football on the Cape. Where'd that country go? Where did all the fun, the joy, and the expression of love and happiness go? We used to be the country that did the ice bucket challenge and raised millions for charity. We used to have a president who calmed and soothed the nation instead of dividing it. And a first lady who planted a garden instead of ripping one out. We are rudderless and joyless. We have lost the cultural aspects of society that make America great. We have lost our mojo, our fun, our happiness, our cheering on of others, the shared experience of humanity that makes it all worth it. The challenges and the triumphs that we shared and celebrated, the unique can-do spirit that America has always been known for. We are lost. We've lost so much in so short a time.
One is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love.
They can learn to hate. They can learn to love. They can learn to hate. They can learn to love. My bad, family. It's part of the piece, but so I'm going to end it there. Donald Trump is an evil man. He really is. He is an evil man. I'm going to find this piece in a minute, family. Don't thank you for your patience. Yeah. I figured it was a nice piece to play prior to the piece I'm going to play with the Caucasian presenting. Here we go. Sorry about that, family. Playing the information statistically, give you a better concept. Here we go.
Okay, I want to take a moment to say thank you to Donald Trump, not out of praise, but out of truth. Because while you rip through every part of this government, tearing down justice, equality, and fairness under the fake excuse of fighting DEI fraud, what you're really doing is confirming what black folks have been saying for generations. America was built on racism, fueled by fear and sustained by white supremacy. You've exposed it all. The masks are off. The polite racism, the fake allyship, the colorblind lies, it's all gone. Now we see it raw and unfiltered. And unfiltered. You're not just targeting policy. You're targeting people. Black people. Brown people. Marginalized communities. And the wild part. We make up the smallest portion of this country. Yet somehow, we are the biggest threat to the lie that white supremacy built. That should tell you everything. You're afraid not of violence, not of replacement, but of the power we hold even when we have nothing. You see, the way our culture, our brilliance, our resilience, our excellence continues to shape this country, even when it tries to erase us. Donald Trump is just the loudest version of a system that's always been in place. He is the living, breathing proof that this country was never designed with us in mind. And yet, we continue to define it. So thank you, Donald, for exposing what so many tried to deny, for showing the world that the fear of black greatness is real, for proving that racism isn't in our imagination, it's in the fabric of this nation. And to my people, we don't have to fight to prove our worth. He's doing that for us. All we have to do is stand firm, stay awake, and know that the truth is finally louder than the lie. We are not broken. We are not the problem. We are the evidence of the power that this country can contain. Let that truth ring louder than his hate.
Well, I agree with that, but I also agree I also agree that there's nothing we can do. They don't want to hear a damn thing we really got to say. And that's long before Trump. It is deeply substantiated by Trump's presidency, Trump's appearance, but there are others, so many others. There are people that you have no clue, that names that you don't know, organizations that have no idea, they agree with this. How can somebody who's done all that he has done go through this process and still make the American people who believe this madness elect this man? It's really ridiculous. It's beyond any kind of rationality, any kind of rationality. I tell you, it's beyond that this man could do what he did. But he said, I could shoot a man in Fifth Avenue in New York in broad daylight and still not lose any votes. I could do all the things that I have done and you'd still vote for me. Then got with Elon Musk, who rigged the election. And to damn it, y'all, he told you he did it. He said, I don't need your votes. I got all the votes I need. 5 days before the actual election, when everybody was saying it's too close to call. No, he said, no, it's not. I got it. I won this. I want all the battleground states. I have more than enough. He said, and he continued to say it has precedent openly. And not one group of legislators, hopefully would be bipartisan, but of course it won't be because the Republicans are some weak ass people and scared of his ass. So, but yet and still, it seems like the Democrats are no better, because they should say, hey, this is what this man said. Let's, you know, there's got to be, if he's openly, now, it's me, I don't know, you know, maybe, you know, you can have an election, and even before the election happens, you can say, I got it. You know, what are you saying? You what do you mean you got it? This is an open election. We've had many polls, and those polls have said this election is too close to call. How can you say you won? I'm telling you, I won it. You don't need to vote for me. I got to. Well, how can you say this, sir? Election day, it happens. Not too close to call. He rigged it. And then he said, I rigged the election. Because Elon Musk and the technology that he had access to could do it. And they did it. They said they did it. He said they did it. As president of the United snakes. And yet nobody said, let us get some lawyers. Let us get some prosecutors. Let us get some police and arrest his ass. No, none of that. You allowed it to continue like it was supposed to happen. Man, he did it. He said, I don't need your votes. I have all the votes I need. I have all the votes I need. You don't have to vote for me. All the other things this man has done, him being a pedophile. That is unbelievable, isn't it? Him being an actual pedophile, hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, there's nothing this man says should ever be believed about anything. Nothing. Any utterances, anything stated should not be believed. He is an habitual liar. No. This man is crazy. But yet, this is who this country elected. And they did so in a way. They did so in a way. Man, I don't know, family. It's just unbelievable that this man could do this. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that this man has the ability. Now, here's a piece that came out recently. Let me see if I can pull this up. Am I going to be able to pull this up? Let me see. Now, one thing about this particular piece is it could be bogus. It could be bogus. I don't even know if I can really pull it up or not. I call myself trying to save it. Maybe not. Where it talks about some children that he allegedly had molested and paid for, you know? That he did it, he was challenged, and he paid the family a settlement. Looks like that's not going to happen for me today, family. And many of the other things that I've saved that deal with this man. Well, I'm going to take a break. When I come back from the break, I'm going to read the piece. Oh, no, I'm going to play the piece, excuse me. I was going to play last week, but somehow I didn't find it, but I found it now. I have it now. So I will definitely do that because it was sent to me by a number of you. So you were reading my mind. Okay. Was it sent to me by Irv? Here it is. Okay. So I got it ready for us once we come back from the break. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get you away.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Let us see in Jaheim. Let's stay together. And then Bob James featuring Jaheim, Ride. Diamonds in the back with the windows cracked, we ride. That's a bad song. I've been playing that for years. Love that song. Yeah. Race. There's no such thing as race. Europeans made it up. Yeah. No such thing as race. Cultures. Yeah, it's cultures. There's no such thing. Because there's one humanity. If there is a race, there is the human race, of which African people are fathers and mothers of. The human race. And what makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to environments that they find themselves in. If they've migrated from a particular point, and I don't know or how long that migration was over periods of hundreds, and if not longer than that, and they settle in a particular place, you adapt. Because if you don't adapt, you die. Exactly. So adaptations are developed for your survival. You know, when Africans were tall and thin, no hair on their body, hot, broad nose, thick lips, close curled hair, hot and arid, you know. They leave out of Africa. Their movement out of Africa was more so to the east and up and then to the west, or to the east and straight ahead into mountain ranges. Now, those who moved out, and if you don't want to believe in evolution, that's fine. If you want to believe that God created, like, through Ham, Shem, and Japheth, that's fine too. There's nothing biological or historical that can prove that, you know. But people believe the Bible because you're trained to believe the Bible, that the Bible is in the infallible word of God. Of course, it is not. But, hey, you know, you're trained to believe that it is the infallible word of God. And so, in that way, then you believe that when Noah was on that ship, the ark, and it finally ran ground to 40 days and 40 nights of rain, and sent a raven out, that's right, didn't come back. Sent a dove out, and a dove came back with an olive branch. That's why they used the olive branch as a symbol of peace, that there's peace now in the land. And all those animals disembarked the ark and migrated to the areas that they're supposed to be in, you know. So all the areas of the world, because remember, the whole world was flood, okay? The whole world was flood. There were no animals nowhere. Water receded, and the animals were in the ark. Yeah, come on now. Let me try to do some historical biology thing out here, and we're talking about Bible. And so Noah made a vineyard, got drunk, you know, he had some grapes, made a vineyard and got crushed the grapes and let them ferment and everything, got drunk, and Ham, his son Ham, saw him naked, because it's hot out, man, you know. So instead of seeing his father naked and covering up his father's nakedness, You know, he told his brothers, Shem and Japheth. And of course, Shem and Japheth, they were like, hey, man, why don't you, later for you, dude, let's go see what's up with Dad. Oh, man, look at him. Damn, ass out and everything. Well, we're going to walk backwards with the cloak or the blanket or whatever the hell we got. And we're going to cover up his nakedness. And then we're going to tell him what Noah had done once he comes out of that drunken state. Okay. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do. And they did. Noah was pissed, you know. And so Noah cursed Ham, black, of course, and to be servants unto his brothers, you know. Noah was condemned. Actually, really, Noah didn't condemn Ham. He actually condemned Canaan. I don't know how that shit goes, you know. But they were supposed to be servants. Ham's lineage was supposed to be servants unto Shem, which is our Arab people, supposedly, and Japheth, which are supposed to be European or Caucasian people. Okay. So, I mean, if I want to justify that, I'd write a Bible like that. And then I say, this is the infallible word of God. And look what the infallible word of God says right here. It says it right here. Yeah. But in the evolutionary sense, you know, we're the first humans on the planet, thousands of years. And you know, they said that all of the archaeologists, anthropologists, paleontologists, all the scientists that say, yes, human life began in Central East Africa and migrates from that point. And what makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to the environments that they try to settle themselves in. So when you come out of Africa, you're going east over that, which is now, you know, the Suez. And of course, the canal was made right there, cutting off the part of Africa that used to be part of Africa, you know, going into the so-called Arabia, the Arabian Peninsula and all of that. And so, cutting all of that off. But anyway, that land bridge was there, just like the land bridge in the Bering Strait, you know, that separates North America from Asia, eastern part of Asia. And you could go on that bridge and then you can come down into entering into what is Alaska, entering into what is Canada, entering into what is the United States, entering into what is Mexico, entering into what is Central America, entering into what is South America. Migration over hundreds, if not thousands of years. And what makes human beings different is that when you find yourself in those places, whatever the climate is, you adapt. Because if you don't adapt, you die. Probably the most prime examples of adaptation to climate. Well, I mean, if you want to do the Neanderthal thing, where they really mutated deeply because their whole body style changed from a slender body, dark skin with no hair, you know, broad nose, big lips, close curled hair, to a stocky body, a lot of fat on it, hair all over the body, long stringy hair, a thin small nose, and tight lips, thin lips. You know, that's the deep part. And their family, y'all look like some monkeys. No, hell, y'all look like monkeys. I watched some things. I said, I'm going to pay attention to this today. How many Caucasians that they show here, their lips are so damn thin. I remember I used to work for this German dude. He had a upholstery thing, and I was just, you know, just trying to help out, trying to earn some money for my family. when I was a kid, back in the 60s. And his wife, they were, you know, definitely Germans, and they immigrated, you know, from Germany. Carl. K-A-R-L, Carl. And so his wife, she used to paint lips on, you know, draw them on there, you know. Yeah. But they have real thin lips. I mean, stocky bodies, all that hair. Yeah. Survival. Because, you know, you got to have hair down your back. You have a closed environment. And so if you don't have hair down your back, at your neck, because your blood has to pump in your chest, and that blood has to get to your brain. Because if your blood is coagulated or it's clotted and so forth, it doesn't get to your brain, you die. You die. And your brain functions everything within your body, breathing, circulation, everything. So anyway, that's one part of that evolution development. The other part, going across those mountains. Precipitation, snow, why raining? So in higher elevations, precipitation is snow. And when it comes down, it's, you know, all over. And if there's snow, the next day it's sunny. And if you go outside and you outside and because of the sun, there's a glare that reflects off the snow that causes you to do what? Squint. Your eyes are just, because it can be very tough. And as those people began to develop, as they moved across and settling into China, settling into the eastern portion of Asia, Southeast Asia, Japan, and so forth, that's what you get. Australia. When the Europeans came and took Australia, there's a good movie, Quigley Down Under, where these folks hired Tom Selleck, because he was a marksman, so to speak, I guess. And he came there and they wanted him to shoot Aboriginal people. There's one scene where they herded them and they with their horses and so forth, and they, you know, backed them off a cliff to their death. There's probably nothing that left the imagination of how to kill these people. Nothing. Just like in Africa, the same thing. Just like they do. There's nothing here. Just like themselves in the Inquisition and the tortures. The European is a deeply flawed human being. Evil human being. Murderous human being. And full of deceit. We're going to talk about, in this particular piece, I'm going to play for you. This is the statistics of racism. This is how it formulates statistically. This is a Caucasian. Hold on.
Why are people protesting? Why are people angry? Slavery ended 150 years ago. The civil rights movement was 60 years ago. Racial discrimination is illegal now. Heck, we even had a black president. So why are people still upset? We're going to go through history and we're going to look at some data. And we're going to go quickly so this video doesn't get too long. So hang on. These are two households in America. One is black, the other is white. Today, the average black household has 60% of the income of the average white household, but only 1/10 of the household wealth. Why does that matter? Well, household wealth helps send kids to school, helps launch small businesses, stabilizes loss of income, and helps families survive catastrophic events like divorce or unemployment. What's amazing about this number is that there are lots of extremely wealthy African Americans. Movie stars, pop stars, 75% of the NBA, 70% of the NFL, Oprah, Tyler Perry, Ben Carson, Morgan Freeman. And there are a lot of extremely poor white families. Think of Appalachia and other parts of rural America. But even when we factor all that in, the average black household still has only one-tenth the wealth of the average white household. How did that happen? Well, here we go. What happened after we freed the slaves, after the Civil War ended? 9 states enacted vagrancy laws, making it a crime to not have a job. The law was applied only to black men. 8 of those states then allowed prisoners, the black men who'd just been arrested for not having a job, to be hired out to plantation owners with little or no pay going to the prisoners themselves. So, that's right, men who had been freed from the plantations found themselves right back on the plantations. Additional laws prohibited mischief and insulting gestures, which allowed more black men to be arrested and created a huge market for convict leasing. Working conditions for these leased convicts could be worse than slavery, because the plantation owner leasing the black prisoner had no long-term interest in his well-being. By the turn of the 20th century, every state in the South had mandated racial segregation by law, Jim Crow laws, which supported a social ostracism for blacks that extended to schools, churches, housing, jobs, restrooms, hotels and restaurants, hospitals, prisons, funeral homes, morgues, and cemeteries. White politicians competed with each other to be more strict and specific on segregation. For example, a law prohibiting blacks and whites from playing chess together. No interracial chess playing. That might lead to lawn darts. In 1896, the Supreme Court ruled that these Jim Crow laws were perfectly legal because they, quote, reflected customs and traditions and, quote, preserved public peace and good order. These laws stayed in place until 1954, when the idea of separate but equal was struck down in the ruling known as Brown versus Board of Education. So what happened next after Brown? Well, in 1956, the Southern Manifesto was signed by 101 out of 128 Congress members from the South, pledging to maintain Jim Crow by all means possible. 5 states passed nearly 50 new Jim Crow laws after 1954. Private whites-only schools, dubbed segregation academies, popped up all across the South, many of them Christian. But now widespread civil rights protests, combined with anti-war protests that were occasionally becoming violent, inspired the political rise of law and order rhetoric. Richard Nixon became the first candidate to campaign specifically on a platform of law and order. In 1968, 81% of Americans agreed that law and order had broken down in this country, and the majority blamed communists and Negroes who start riots. Let's go back to household wealth. The average black household has one-tenth the wealth of the average white household. Why is that? Because the number one source of intergenerational wealth in America is home ownership. And from the 1930s to well into the 1960s, the federal government enacted policies to actively encourage white families to own homes and discourage black families from doing the same. In 1934, the Federal Housing Administration created a risk rating system to determine which neighborhoods were safe investment for federally backed mortgages. Black neighborhoods were deemed too risky, marked off in maps with red ink, in a practice now known as redlining. After World War II, a boom of new suburban housing was built all over the country, much of it restricted by deed to whites only. In 1948, 40% of new housing developments in Minneapolis, for example, had covenants prohibiting purchase by African Americans. So blacks couldn't live in white neighborhoods and couldn't get federally insured loans for black neighborhoods. Until 1950, the Realtors Code of Ethics specifically prohibited selling a house in a white neighborhood to a non-white family. You could lose your realtor's license if you helped a black family buy a home in a white neighborhood. In the 1930s, the FHA's underwriting manual said, quote, incompatible racial groups should not be permitted to live in the same communities. The FHA went on to recommend that highways would be a great way to separate black neighborhoods from white neighborhoods. The FHA funded huge white-only suburban housing developments, leaving blacks behind in inner cities. After World War II, the GI Bill provided subsidized mortgages to help millions of men returning from war to buy their first home. While technically eligible for the GI Bill, the way it was administered left 1 million black veterans largely on the outside looking in. In New York and New Jersey, the GI Bill insured more than 67,000 new mortgages. Fewer than 100 of those went for homes purchased by non-whites. In 1947, there were 3,200 mortgages in Mississippi be guaranteed by the government for returning veterans. Of the 3,200, only two went to black veterans. As a result, white families after the war were able to build home equity, growing wealth for retirement, inheritance, and college education for their kids. One historian has stated that there was no greater instrument for widening an already huge racial gap in post-war America than the GI Bill. And then came the war on drugs. Inner-city blacks were extremely vulnerable economically. The overwhelming majority of African Americans in 1970 lacked college degrees and had grown up in fully segregated schools. In the second half of the 20th century, factories and manufacturing jobs moved to the suburbs. Black workers struggled to follow the jobs. They couldn't live in many of the new suburban developments. And as late as 1970, only 28% of black fathers had access to a car. When a white man in Cicero, Illinois, just outside Chicago, sublet an apartment to a black family, the white community rioted, setting fire to the apartment building and smashing windows until the National Guard had to intervene. The result of all of this. In 1970, 70% of African American men had good blue-collar jobs. By 1987, only 28% did. As unemployment skyrocketed in African-American communities, so did drug use. As drug use increased, so did crime. A dynamic today that we see playing out in white rural communities hit hard by unemployment and opioid addiction. Throughout the 1970s, white America became increasingly concerned by images of black violence shown on TV and in magazines. Drugs were the problem. Drug dealers and drug users were the enemy. So we decided to treat the drug epidemic not as a health crisis, but as a crisis of criminality, and we militarized our response. During the Reagan-Bush years from 1981 to 1991, how we invested money in anti-drug allocation completely changed. The anti-drug budget for the Department of Defense went from $33 million in 1981 to more than $1 billion in 1991. The Drug Enforcement Agency's budget to fight criminality and drug use went from $86 million to more than $1 billion. Then we came to the 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act, which carried mandatory minimum sentences, much harsher for the distribution of crack cocaine, which was associated with blacks, than powder cocaine, which was associated with whites. Mandated evictions from public housing for any tenant who permitted drug-related criminal activity to occur on or near premises. It eliminated many government benefits, including student loans, for anyone convicted of a drug crime. The 1988 revision set a 5-year minimum sentence for possessing any amount of crack cocaine, even if there was no intent to distribute. Previously, it had been a 1-year maximum sentence for possessing any amount of any drug without the intent to distribute. Now, it might seem like we're picking on Republicans, so now it's time to pick on some Democrats. During the Clinton presidency, the funding for public housing was cut by $17 billion. At the same time, the funding for prisons increased by $19 billion. The number of Americans imprisoned for drug crimes exploded. In 1980, there were 41,000 Americans imprisoned for drug crimes. Today, there are more than 500,000, more than the entire 1980 prison population. Most arrests are for possession. In 2005, 80% of the arrests were for possessing drugs, not selling drugs. In a bizarre twist, we also militarized our police forces. Between 1997 and 1999, the Pentagon handled 3.4 million orders for military equipment from more than 11,000 police agencies, including 253 aircraft, including Black Hawk and Huey helicopters, 7,800 M16 rifles, 181 grenade launchers, grenade launchers for the police, 8,000 bulletproof helmets, 1,200 night vision goggles. We also changed policing tactics. A no-knock entry is when a SWAT team literally breaks down your door or smashes in through the windows, like in E.T. when the cops come flying in from every direction looking for E.T. So back to Minneapolis. In 1986, Minneapolis SWAT teams performed no-knock entries 35 times. 10 years later, in 1996, they performed no-knock entries 700 times. That's two every day. There were financial incentives for arresting more drug users. Federal grants to local police departments were tied to the number of drug arrests. Research suggests the huge surge in arrests from increased drug enforcement was due more to budget incentives than to actual increases in drug use. So what was the result? An explosion of our prison population. In 25 years, the U.S. prison population went from 350,000 to over 2.3 million. The United States now has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. We imprison a higher percentage of our black population than South Africa ever did during apartheid. Data shows that the increased prison population was driven primarily by changes in sentencing policy. There was no visible connection between higher incarceration rates and higher violent crime rates. If you are a drug felon, you are barred from public housing. You are ineligible for food stamps. You're forced to check the box on employment applications marking yourself as a convicted felon. A criminal record has been shown to reduce the likelihood of getting a callback or job offer by as much as 50%. The negative impact of a criminal record for an African-American job applicant is twice as large as for a white applicant. In 2006, one in 106 white men was behind bars. For black men, it was one in 14. For black men between the age of 20 and 35, the age where families are built, it's one in 9. Overall, African Americans and white Americans use drugs at roughly the same rate. But the imprisonment rate of African Americans for drug charges is almost 6 times that of whites. It may be true that there isn't explicit racism in our legal system anymore, but it doesn't mean justice is blind. A study, a law in Georgia, permitted prosecutors to seek life imprisonment for a second drug offense. Over the period of the study, this law was used against 1% of white second-time offenders and 16% of black second-time offenders. As a result, 98% of prisoners serving life sentences under this law were black. Study. African-American youth in the U.S. make up 16% of all youth, but 28% of all juvenile arrests, 35% of youth sent to adult court instead of juvenile court, and 58% of youth admitted to adult state prison. Study. Blacks on the New Jersey Turnpike make up 15% of all drivers, but 42% of all stops by police and 73% of all arrests. Among all drivers stopped, white drivers were 2 times more likely than black drivers to be carrying drugs. Study. Volusia County, Florida. 5% of drivers were black or Latino, but 80% of drivers stopped were black or Latino. Study, Oakland, California. Black drivers are twice as likely as white drivers to be stopped and 3 times more likely to be searched. In Minneapolis, Philando Castile had been pulled over 49 times in 13 years, mostly for minor infractions. The 49th time he was pulled over, he was shot by the officer while sitting inside his car. He'd been pulled over for a broken taillight. Chuck Colson's organization, Prison Fellowship, recently organized a manifesto that was signed by evangelical leaders asserting that our over-reliance on incarceration fails to make us safer or restore the people and communities who have been harmed. Unconscious bias seeps into schools, too, as white teachers often assume black students are less intelligent than they actually are. A gifted student usually has to be recommended by a teacher to move to a gifted track. When a teacher is black, an equally gifted white and black student have comparable chances of being recommended. When the teacher is white, the black student's odds of being recommended are cut in half. Are white teachers racist? No. Are they affected by bias? Yes. And it affects black students every day. So where are we? The average black household has one-tenth the wealth of the average white household. This didn't happen by accident. It happened by policy. We, the majority culture, told them where they could live and where they couldn't. Then we moved most of the jobs to the places we told them they couldn't live. When the predictable explosion of unemployment and poverty resulted in a predictable increase in drug use and crime, we criminalized the problem. We built $19 billion of new jails and sold grenade launchers to the police. As a result, a white boy born in America today has a 1 in 23 chance of going to prison in his lifetime. For a black boy, it's 1 in 4. And that is why people are angry. Many people care deeply about these issues. Many have suggested solutions. Some of those have been tested, with results ranging from moderate success to abject failure. I'm not here to tell you what the right solutions are, because I don't know. I'm just here to ask you to do one thing. It is the thing that begins every journey to a solution for every problem. What am I asking you to do? Care.
No, they don't care. It's mind over matter. They don't mind doing to us what they have done to us, because to them, we don't matter. We don't matter. You know, they just wish we would just disappear, you know. Ain't no more cotton to pick. Ain't no more tobacco to pick. Ain't no more sugar cane. No. Machines do that. We just wish they would disappear. Man. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, Brother Irv. What's happening?
Baboji, how are you? Can you hear me well?
Very well, my friend.
Baboji, you just made a statement that was so profound. You said there's no more cotton to pick.
That's right.
We are the cotton, Baba Oshi. Mm-hmm. The cotton was picked because it made money.
Oh, big money.
We are being picked. And so we are being picked now because we are making money. The prison system is about money. Mm-hmm. It's not about justice. It's not about changing your mindset so that you don't become a criminal. It's about money. Each one of these prisoners represents money to the private prison industrial system that we live under. So no, Baboshi, what you just played needs to be played every day mm-hmm. in this country, because these are the things that American Africans try not to see. We put our hands over our eyes because we have a few dollars, or we may intoxicate ourselves to forget about our problems and escapism. That's why you see marijuana being legal. That's the one thing our community doesn't need right now, is another way to escape what it is that's in front of us. Legalizing marijuana and legalizing alcohol and all the other things that are used to keep us from realizing what the situation is and where we are. I'm not saying it's our fault that we're here. Remember, Baba Oshie, our ancestors didn't ask to come here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were brought here as a commodity. They were brought here to make somebody else money. Mm-hmm. So it all rallies around the capitalistic mindset that these white people live under, and that's where the materialism comes from. Baba Oshie, mm-hmm. what you just said was so powerful. What you just played was so powerful, but they won't teach this in schools.
Oh, of course
they
not.
Won't show this. They won't even teach this at the college level. Because they understand that once you understand that that is a target on your back, then you move different. This is mm-hmm. about the way you move. The more education you have, the more history you know, and history is current events, which I will say till I die. We move different. You ain't so quick to marry a white woman. You ain't so quick to want to partner up with these Caucasians just because you all were on a sports team together and we all had a great time. But when the sports game is over, and the football season is over, then we go back to being the racist, chauvinist, militarized people that we are, the mm-hmm. violent people that we are. So no, Baba Oshie, what you just played was powerful. It was powerful, and I'm so glad I heard that, because I knew it. I just didn't know how to put it where the goats could get it. In other words, I couldn't put it where I can package it. And you did that, Baba Oshie, and thank God for you. Mm-hmm. and that you saw that that needed to be said and needed to be heard. And believe me, we hear what you're saying out here, listening. And I'm just listening, brother, today.
I'm just trying to throw it out there for us to understand it, for us to think about it, you know, think deeply about it, all these things. You know, the bottom line for me is this place has consistently shown us. That's why I played that one piece by the brother who said Donald Trump, all the stuff he's done can now just, no doubt about it, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This is a racist-ass society. All those other Negroes who said it is not a damn fool, and they know they are anyway. But this is what it is, and it's not going to change. There's nothing we can do to make this situation better for us. What we can do, of course, is come together and challenge it at the times that is so deeply oppressive against us to do that, not just to kowtow to it, but then prepare educationally, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically to get up out of this madness. We cannot live here in peace with a people who are hell bent on destroying us, eliminating us. That is their modus operandi, to kill us. This is menticide. That's what this is, a destroying of a people's mind. And these people, because once you have succumbed to menticide, now you can be physically eliminated and feel that it is justified. No, man, we are in a bad situation, Brother Irv.
No, you're absolutely correct, Bob Oshie. Once you look at a person as a savage, you look at a person as a dog, it's easy to run them over with your car. Oh, yep. I hit a dog? Oh, I'm sorry. But what happens when you hit a person? What happens when you make that person into that dog, when you make that person into that savage? So it's not what you think of yourself. It's what they think of you. And they have shown you through history what they think of you. Donald Trump has just federalized Washington, D.C. He is calling the National Guard to Washington, D.C.,
that's right.
Baba.
That's right.
And he's going to eliminate the slums. He's telling you he's going to help you. No, what he's going to do is he's figuring out a better way to kill your black ass.
That's what he's doing. Yeah.
And they're clapping. Thank you, Donald Trump, for letting the police do their job. Well, what have they been doing all this time if they haven't been doing their job? What have they been doing? They've been trying to kill. See, this is the part, and I'm going to stop after this, Baba. These Caucasians that we live amongst, and when a scholar, when one of our scholars moves to Africa because the scholar realizes that this country is not going to change, and we've had many scholars that have done that, move to Africa. Because it's not going to change. And when I hear you say that, it's so much truth in that. They're not, if you sit and wait for them to change, you're a damn fool. And don't blame any, you can't, there's no sense, we're not going to blame each other. What we're going to do is we're going to constantly fight either here or in my homeland, because I have a homeland. I'm just not coming to someone else's homeland and killing them and taking it. We're going to take the Gaza Strip. You're going to take it from who? From who? From now.
Yeah. Bravo. It's crazy, ain't it, man?
Thank you.
It's crazy.
Thank you, my brother. Someone else speak. I know they want to speak. Thank you, my
brother. Love you, dear brother.
Love
peace,
you, man.
Thank you.
I say.
Yeah. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, and you know what to do. You're in the queue. Here, hit star twice. You can get on this conversation. You know, once again, we're at war for the minds of our people. We're at war. You know, menticide is happening to us, and it has been happening to us. It's a process. Some of us are so deeply affected that some of us can't. You know, I always used that analogy of the vice grip. These crackers have a vice grip on our minds. Once you know that tool, once you get where you can clamp it, once it's clamped, you can't pull it apart. The only way that you can deal with that is that you turn the knob at the end of the handle. turning the knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. And the more knowledge you get, the stronger you are mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. You become, so you can turn that knob until finally you can release the vice grip on your mind. And when you see the Caucasian, hell with him. He's going to die. What you do is get away and then come together and build for yourself. Because you see them for who they are. You ain't trying to continue to join him and try to make him understand, and you put that on my mind, or you mentally try to destroy my mind. Now I want to be part of who you are. No. Good afternoon, dear brother. It's Brother Paul.
Good afternoon, Grand Rising,
dear friend. Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Yes.
To anybody listening to this, so wonderful platform with our Baba Ochi. Baba Ochi, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Yes.
Well, it's good to hear that, Baba Ochi. You know, I was thinking, there's a brother here, yeah? He's got a platform. He's on the radio.
Good.
Once a week. He calls himself Danny God, yeah?
He calls himself what? Danny?
Danny God, something like Danny God or something.
Okay.
Nonsense like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway. According to him, he's wrote a book, which I certainly won't be buying, about Donald Hitler, Mussolini, Trump, the dump. Mm. And he claims that most of the things being waged against him is propaganda.
Shh.
You understand?
Shh. Okay.
And I tell you what, I listen to this brother every so often. I ring in, man, but it's not a good when I ring in, it's not a good show, man, because he talks so much bullcrap. And what he tries to do, right, when you put facts to him, undisputed facts to him, he tries to gaslight you by asking
right.
the same question.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you give him an answer, and because he doesn't like the answer, he pretends that you've not answered his question. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the wrong person for that. Cause I'm gonna just take him apart. And so he always. It's not what I want to do, because I know that's not really good listening. But mm-hmm. the truth of the matter is, I will not allow anybody to gaslight me, man. I know what I'm talking about. I do a lot of research. I cross-reference. I've had an education which has taught me how to cross-reference things and how to research things with due diligence, bro. So I ain't going to talk out the third chapter of my imagination or just talk a lot of nonsense that I don't get. But, you know, unfortunately, there are people in this world. I don't know what's wrong with them, man. And they look like me and you, but mm-hmm. truthfully, man, I just don't get it. You know what I mean? I just don't get it. Every week he's on with this nonsense, talking about, oh, poor Trump and this and, you know, and people got it wrong about him and all the rest of it. And I'm thinking, my God. It's now, bad. The reality of it is, I'm not saying he's that dumb, but the reality of it is, you know, we have people like that.
Yes.
That we
yes.
have them people.
We have them. Yes.
And I just have to wonder what is going on with their head. Because
mm-hmm.
these are real people, and they look like me and you, and
right.
they, you know they're not un-so-called educated by the Eurocentric indoctrination,
mm-hmm.
but boy, I don't know what's going on with them, Baba Ochi. I just do not know. It's just confusing. But you know, when you were playing that piece by that brother, I was thinking the same thing, and I'm glad he made the point that. That what Donald Hitler, Mussolini, Trump, the dump really is, he's the personification that all that be, meaning that it's the same colonial plan. It's just, he's just the personification of it.
Mm-hmm.
You got Joe Sleepy Biden, who comes along and he nurtures you very softly, talks to you nicely, pretend that he's on your side. But we all know he's the most racist,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most racist, corrupt, yeah. Whatever you want to call him, with his son Hunter Biden,
yeah.
the total loser. You're always saying, mm-hmm. but then they duff us up like Clinton does. He comes and plays the what do you call it? The saxophone, and we all say, yeah, he's a black man. White man playing a saxophone, and then we say he's a black man.
Man, Paul, believe me, man. When they did that, I hated us for that, man. Many of them say that Clinton was the first black president, and just that, and because he played the saxophone with shades on Arsenio Hall's show. And many of us were watching Arsenio Hall around that time when he first came on, and that happened. I hated it with a passion, man. I just couldn't. And I've never liked the Clintons. I hate the Clintons, especially for what they did in Haiti. You know, they played the people of Haiti tremendously, man. Yeah.
Absolutely. They are all part of the same bloodline. Look, people think this is hocus pocus and fairy tales, you know, but then they need to go and do the proper research, not the research they get off CNN or one of them mainstream mass manipulating media stations. I'm talking about the real due diligence, meaning using your intellect, using your own intelligence, using your own investigation skills, and go and read everything. And then you will see that all these people are the same. They come with the same agenda. They just play good cop and bad cop. Mm-hmm. Good cop, bad cop. Red and blue. And flip the script every minute. Flip the script. And they just had that. They have us. We got to accept. A great deal of us, I don't know the percentage, are really hoodwinked. And a great deal of us are really bamboozled.
Yes.
Seriously. And for me, Baba Ochi, for me, I know you don't like this, but the reality of it is that I personally do not see, you know, Baba Ochi, one thing, I keep meaning to say this to you, you know, that attempted assassination, right? Me, I think we both agree that was all
staged. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Trump's assassination. Big time staged. Yeah. Terrible. Terrible. It was just
right. Big time stage, right?
Yes.
So let's see if we can get some agreement on this, yeah?
Okay.
Bob Olchie, for him to stage that, right? How comes, I mean, it was so obvious to anyone with reasonable intelligence.
Right. Reasonable.
It was obvious, yeah?
Yes, I agree.
Right. So listen to this, Bob Olchie. Now, a reasonable minded person, knowing what we know and accepting what we accept, right? He could not have done that wrong. He could not have done that wrong, could he?
No, of course not. No.
Hold on, Paul.
Slow down, because when it happens, I can't understand you. Something happens with the go ahead. So you see, no, he could not have done it alone. So go ahead with your statement.
No, we agree on that, don't we?
Yes, we do. Definitely.
Right. So if you listen, what I'm trying to say to you, Baba Olchie, if he didn't do it alone, he must have had the whole Secret Service, the whole government behind him.
Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
Well, let me tell you why that's a fact. Because everybody could see that that was staged, or anyone with a reasonable mind. So therefore, why are they screaming from high school? Hey, idiot, you staged that shit. No, they keep being silent because they're part of it. Right? How come your position ain't screaming for high school? That was staged. We know that was staged. No bullet can just clip your ear and make you believe that.
Right.
I mean, come on. Right? They're not saying a word. Do you know why? Because they are all part of it.
Sure.
You know, presidents, I think you agree on this. Presidents are not elected. They are
selected. They are selected. And he was selected. And he was truly selected. Huh? Yes. Well, you know, I've been, Paul, I've been saying, the first time I heard it was, announced here on MSNBC, Rachel Maddow. She's the first one to say it, that Donald Trump has said he doesn't need anybody's votes. This is 5 days before the actual election. He kept saying, I don't want you to vote for me. He's saying it on Fox News, his favorite station. He's saying it. You hear the clip. He's saying, it's not like somebody quoted him saying, no, he is physically saying it. I don't need your votes. You don't have to, have to come on Tuesday. I got it. I got it in the bag. And he winds up winning big time. He wins all of the battleground states. He wins by huge markers. It's over. He's won it. And then he still has the gall and the audacity to say, you know, yeah, we took this election. You know, yeah. And then yet nobody's doing a damn thing about it. Nobody in the government is saying, hey, listen.
This is the reason. This is the reason why. I'm going to give you the reason why. Why no one's going to do a damn thing about it. People got short memories. When he first came into power, right, I remember a lot of talk about white populations dropping out.
Sure.
Not just in America, all around the world, they're
right.
dropping out, right?
Right.
They've done a human study. It's called the Genome Project.
Sure.
It ran for 25 years. Now, they don't really tell us what they found, but I know what they found. They worked out that the white people are coming off the planet. They worked
right.
out the time.
But, right.
So listen, he knows Russia is the biggest white country in the world. Russia. So he knows he has to work with them, because what he's trying to do is keep his people surviving. Take care.
Yep. All right, Paul. I appreciate you, man. You're right. That's right. That's why all these conflicts between United States and Russia and so forth, Europe and is bull. Because this is always, and has been, about white genetic survival. Frances Cress Welsing told us that. With her and I'm thinking of the brother's name. The Crest theory on color confrontation, they told us that. It was all about white genetic survival. Because they know that we could wipe them out. When Caucasians came out of that dark age, that those so-called dark age, medieval age, warring amongst themselves, you know, and then they began to venture out, taking everybody's stuff in the name of. One of the things they seen is that by having sexual relationships with people outside of them who had melanin, various parts of melanin, the offspring did not look like them, causing an innate fear within them of genetic annihilation. So they must dominate and control the world. But listen, my time is up. I hope that, I make these particular points all the time. And the reason why is to get you to think and to get you to love yourself and love each other. Talk to your family. I know it's tough. Hell, my family ain't changing their name. My family ain't going to Africa. You know what? Fine. Y'all ass don't want to go? Don't. Believe me. But it's real. So I appreciate Brother Irv always being there. Brother Paul. And there's a few other folks that were on but didn't want to stay on. Brother Luss, of course. And Jay, you know, I haven't heard Jay's voice, but I did see him come up. And a few others. And I appreciate all those who listen to this program. Hope you'll be with us again on Wednesday, where we can, you know, you can give your African perspective. Thank you, my friends. Thank you, my brothers. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadie. Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Be safe, family. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace.